created it. Don't you? I created it, and it's real. Don't you understand?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Struggle Session. I am Leslie Lee III. Today, folks, we're talking about the Tokyo Olympics 202X, I think, officially, because they were supposed to be in 2020, right? And allegedly, they are happening in just a few weeks, even though Tokyo just ended a COVID lockdown. Allegedly, they're taking place in a few weeks. Hopefully not. 202X may be delayed, but whenever they're supposed to be happening, I have two guests here today that hopefully we'll be able to stop it. Johnny Coleman and Molly from No Olympics, thank you so much for joining us today.
What's up? Thanks for having us on Struggle Session. We are big fans.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. Yeah, I don't know. It's a weird situation because I think, you know, just to cut to the chase on some of it, I'm pretty sure they're going to happen. I'm pretty
confident.
Looks
like they're doing it. Looks like nothing could stop it because that's how the IOC contract works.
So, but not, you know, and then we're jumping ahead of ourselves a little bit. So I think we have more opportunities also to talk about it as a, you know, as a pop culture product too, because I think it's kind of fascinating and does things well and does things like actually not that well. The American version of it, I guess, you know, like the American centric coverage of the Olympics, which this year will probably be like super either, you know, dog shit as far as competition and spectacle, like limitations, and maybe trying to compensate that on the other side.
They're just not going to talk about any of the stuff that's happening off screen. But I think people are realizing that it's very dangerous to hold the Olympics right now. We like to say it's bad always.
Because the coverage is always the, you know, these stories of these people, you know, overcoming these odds. They grew up in a poor neighbor. They grew up displaced. And it turns out, I guess, most of the displacement that's destroying these young athletes' lives that they have to overcome is actually caused by prior Olympics destroying their whole city and economy beforehand. So for people who don't know why the Olympics are bad in the first place, please can you break it down for them?
Sure. I'll give you like the quickie version of it is that, especially in like people, you know, and I think the listenership here and like Gen X and younger have experienced just the acceleration of capitalism in general. And like one of those things that it's extended to is the Olympics. And, you know, in the 80s, they really got turbocharged with sponsor money and the growth of like telecommunications and cable networks around the planet, like the scale of that on the financial end has just exploded. So the necessity to like develop entire cities and turn them into like whatever the next version of it is, as far as what developers and policing and security interests want, is always there. But, you know, like I said, it's been accelerated in the last few decades to like a ridiculous degree where I think we, like across other institutions and things, we can see the seams of the world coming undone. But it's always been like that. You know, it started in the late 1800s, like a French aristocrat, like eugenicist.
Yeah, it's basically an offshoot of the World's Fair.
Yeah. And they're doing the, I think the U.S., gymnastics trials today in St. Louis, and one of our members grew up in St. Louis. And in 1904, they had an Olympics in St. Louis that they've tried to retcon out of existence, but it had this thing called the Anthropology Games, or the Anthropology Days, rather. That's like super fucked up, and the whole project has been just like a money and clout grab from the beginning, from like, you know, rich European, and now, you know, more, you know, it's more decentralized than that now, but a very, very small amount of people profit off this. And that's kind of the core ethos of this, is that like, yes, it's an interesting TV show and spectacle that a lot of casual, you know, sports fans or pop, you know, people that are into pop culture tune into every few years, but there's so many reasons to hate them. And our campaign that we started a few years ago in LA that's built off the work in other cities like Rio and London and so on and Tokyo and so forth, is that the policing and the displacement and like the effects on the poorest people, the most marginalized people in a city already that is probably hurting from these issues already, are the people that are going to get the most fucked. So LA's had it a few times, a couple times, like Paris, like some other upcoming cities, like Tokyo. You know, we've met people in Tokyo that have were displaced in 1964 and are being displaced again for this version of it. You know, they're obviously older now. They're elderly now. So the double displacement hits extra hard. So that's the pattern. It's getting more and more acute and more like obvious. And it's more and more difficult for the media to like cover it up. So we're in a very interesting phase where people are pissed, but they're going to happen anyway. So like, what does that mean? You know, and we're fighting a bit in LA. That's games that are supposed to happen in 7 years now, like to the date basically. And we're trying to mobilize and, you know, get people excited and build power. And we've been doing it for about 4 years. And I think we've come a long way, but there's also so much, like LA is an extremely fucked up place, as probably people know, and like most big urban, you know, like cities. So it's been a ride, and we were able to, not to ramble too far, but we were able to go to send about 15 members of the LA kind of, you know, contingent and to Tokyo 2 years ago, like to the date basically, or to a month from now to the date of July 2019. It was supposed to be 1 year out from the original date of 2020. And so we had folks from East, you know, Boyle Heights that had fought the galleries here, which was, you know, a kind of similar spiritual story. We had folks from Ground Game Sage, the Tenants Union. We all went over the Street Watch LA. We all went over there and kind of met everyone that's been fighting this for like 10 years there. And everything they were saying was the same thing that was happening here.
Because whenever you say No Olympics, you always say No Olympics LA. And it makes me think of like Pacific Rim. It's like there's No Olympics LA. There's No Olympics Japan. There's No Olympics Russia. And all of you have these Jaegers that you're trying to deploy in order to stop Olympics.
It's very similar. And as you may know, there's also a lot of connections to Akira, which takes place around the chaos and destruction of the 2020 Olympic Tokyo Games. And then it came true. It came true.
Part of the reason why people were so surprised that Tokyo was even taking on the Olympic Games. First of all, like Tokyo doesn't need any more fucking stadiums, right? Like it doesn't need anything else. And that's been such a big part of these Olympics bids. Like, oh, you get to build yourself a brand new world-class soccer stadium. But Tokyo is one of the Tokyo is one of the busiest sports cities in the world.
Right. And they don't need tourism. So the other big alleged selling point of the Olympics doesn't make any sense because it's not like people don't know that Tokyo is like a world-class city.
And the idea of a world-class city is something that we fight, even though that, you know, we these cities now are, quote, on the world stage already, so it's ridiculous. But it's always been kind of this, like you said, going back to the 2011 disaster, in 2013 is when it was awarded. They, you know, everyone knows the old Olympic system where you get five or six, you know, host cities slash countries like bidding on a project. That has basically been dissolved in the last couple of years, like basically this year and last couple of years with the LA bid. But back in the day, not like 8 years ago, Tokyo won that bid, and it was it had, you know, a lot of support. One of our basic my pet theories is that like any city that gets that far along in the process has like democracy so compromised, and that the fact that it's a symptom of like much larger problems with the media and development and police really taking a stranglehold of the city, regardless of what, you know, hemisphere we're in. But the 2013 bid was always positioned as like a recovery games, right? Like, so by the time 2020 rolls around, Japan would have recovered from this like historically awful disaster. So when we were there in 2019, a year before they were supposed to happen, part of our group went off and traveled to Fukushima. You know, we were invited by folks on the ground there. The majority of them are unhoused or formerly unhoused residents that have been fighting this issue. Their name is Hanger and Nokai, which means, no Olympics or no thank you, I think. And there's an academic kind of other offshoot that's been fighting this forever. And they invited us over there, and that's why we went. And those are people who are leading the efforts there now. And we have footage from Fukushima. We showed a little bit online, but where, you know, it was very clear by 2019 and 2020, and then now push back to 2021, that it is very much not recovered. You know, this is a mass displacement event. It's obviously an ecological event. And so many people still have not returned home to this day. So many parts of that region are really decimated, depressed. And, you know, we walked around, our crew walked around with radiation meters and found really high, like, you know, ratings walking around. There's a lot of soil that had been contaminated that was still there in 2019. And surprisingly, because of the COVIDness of everything, kind of bearing this like more obviously to people, is that the mainstream media, at least in America and in the West, has kind of rejected this recovery narrative, which is one of the big surprises for me this year, is that has been fully thrown out the window. I think at least most coverage of it is skeptical, which means that there's, I think, some really organic truth to that if CNN and ESPN can't deny these things. So that was harrowing to go there. We've been working on some larger projects, we'll show some of the longer form version of what we captured there and documented there soon at some point, I think. But it's been a nightmare. So in those 7 to 8 years now, it's been recovery effort, right? Like putting resources actually away from recovery in towards the Olympics, which is at least $20 billion over budget, which we think is just an understatement and doesn't include a lot of security and other hidden costs that come with every Olympic bid, which are fictional. So it's been a real big disservice to the residents or former residents of Fukushima, because they should be going towards recovery. And this was all before even COVID happened. So it's just like a doubling down of all these issues of like diversion of resources and lack of democracy. And just the fact that this is corporately run. You know, one of the big things we learned from 64 is that the private security industry, you know, that whole industrial complex was created out of the 64 Olympics. So ALSOC, I'm blanking on, is it CECOM? The main two sponsors, and they're providing security for the 2020/2021 Olympics were literally created for the last Olympics, which has so many echoes with LA, and like just imagining where those resources and where all this effort could be going otherwise is like, you know, this is a really extreme example, and it's really on the nose with the Akira stuff and all this other shit. So I think one of the big questions is, how do you harness this? You know,
it does seem, at least from my friends, just anecdotally and from, you know, polling, that people are pretty angry and don't think these Olympics should happen. In one part, because like absolutely none of the benefits that are ever promised even apply to Tokyo, and certainly don't apply during COVID. Because, you know, first thing, tourism. First of all, Tokyo doesn't need tourism. And if it's going to get tourism, it's not going to get it in the middle of goddamn summer. I've told this story a couple of times. The first time I went to Japan, it was with this guy called George Mayfield, who had flown to Japan like 30 times. He's from Georgia. He's from the South. Cool old black dude, right? He's gone 30 times. And he told me, you know, one time I made the mistake of going to Japan in the summer, and I cut my trip early and went home. This is a man from Georgia. That's how hot and humid Tokyo is. It's completely bizarre to try to have a summer games in Tokyo. I know they have to do the marathon at night, but Tokyo at like 2 a.m. midnight is like 90 degrees during the summer, because it's so humid and that water just retains all that heat right there. It's just absolutely, like, you can get heat stroke like at night. That's the thing that the athletes are worried about.
Yeah, the summer we were there in 2019, you know, I'm from the South as well. And so and I run hot in general, but I'm from a very humid fucking climate, and LA has been getting progressively more humid, unfortunately, in the last few years. When we went there, it was literally July 23rd, 2019. We were there for like, you know, 7 days plus or minus on each side. So right when, you know, they would be happening that year, or I guess this year, awful, like fucking awful day and night. And that was one of the big narratives in the press, as far as the, at least the sports media, was like, is this safe to do? And one of the funny things is because no, you know, flurry of news about the Olympics is fucking insane to keep up with. But one of the big things in like late 2019, before COVID became a thing, was they were like, the two solves they were trying to do was, one was a Canadian pharmaceutical company being like, oh, here's a pill we're developing, we're rushing through development to see if we can regulate like marathon runners' like body temperature, which is ridiculous. I don't think that bore out. And the other one was like, can we do like big fan, shooting out artificial ice / snow or whatever over the athletes to create, you know, to body cool or whatever. And then that didn't bear out. And then later, no one will remember this one, but in Wired covered this in late 2019. They were bragging about, you know, beefing up the surveillance and security narrative. They were like, hey, Tokyo 2020 is so ahead of the game that they're importing like the 9 most hardcore viruses from around the world to like get ahead of that biotech shit, you know, bioterrorism shit. And again, it's like, these are just things that just pass, and you know, it's just like the fake, you know, snow they're trying to sell. And you know, part of our job is collecting these things and reminding them that they said that, they boasted about that, even though we don't think that that is the reason, of course, that COVID was out, you know, broke out. But that's one of the hard things, is keeping up with these narratives, right? Because it was just a year ago that we were just going through the fact that they were probably burying COVID statistics and having the cruise ship off, you know, and just holding people there and quarantining them there. And like, we don't think that's unrelated to the Olympics, you know. I don't think that's super tinfoil-y to say that that didn't have something to do with that.
What is the purpose of the Olympics, really? Like, why do we need to develop drugs to pump into long-distance marathon runners? Are there that many long-distance marathon fans that we need to have this event? And when you point out, when you think about the fact that in this year, there won't be, they were going to think about doing it with no fans. There are going to be limited fans in some capacity, no foreign fans, nobody's coming in, so the tourism isn't there. Is this all just to get the TV footage for the TV deals? Because that's the where most of the money ends up being.
Yes, exactly. It's all about money, and money for a select few oligarchs. And, you know, obviously a lot of these sports are not televised normally. So they also just use the fact that like, oh, if you're a long distance running fan, this is the only time you can see long distance running, which is just because of the way sports networks are programmed. There's no reason that we couldn't just have long distance running all the time if we wanted to.
Or was, yeah. And I think that that argument used to work better as like, oh, this is the only way you can get this niche sport. And like, this is one of the very few things that will ever concede the Olympics, is that they kind of elevated, especially female sports and more obscure sports outside of like, you know, at least Western or American context. And you know, like gymnastics is the big one, you know, and gymnastics is the loaded one. And that's the one happening today. But it's also the site of probably the most, you know, overt abuse on so many levels for decades, and the least amount of accountability. But they're all kind of, they all kind of function like that. So I think in 2021, the Olympics, and for a long time, have just satisfied the casual viewer more than anyone. The person that actually doesn't really give a shit about these sports and will tune in every 4 years and like gets into the hashtag or gets into the moment or gets into the, watches it for the commercials, like the Super Bowl thing or whatever, and like kind of creates like the fanfare around it. And that's fine. But like, that is not in this, like you, if you like soccer, if you like curling or whatever, it's like, and you have access to the internet or, you know, like a little bit of disposable income, you can probably find a way to like keep up with that sport, and you don't need something that's every 4 years. And in so many ways to the athletes, that the every 4 year structure is extremely unfair if you really want to break it down, even though that's not really like, you know, the nexus of our campaign or like what we focus on a lot, but it's, it's the communities that we're really focused on, but they even still on that level of a pop culture product, especially before in the last 15 years when networks in America have struggled with how to like cover sports networks, how to cover things in other countries in time zones, I would say it's still like a really pretty deficient product outside of like the opening ceremonies, which I think people remember most, or the couple athletic highlight moments that, you know, highlight Americans or whatever host country you're from, I guess. But the pattern is kind of similar, and it's very, you know, obviously like human interest story stuff, and especially once you consider the Paralympics. But, you know, like a lot of people we organize with in Japan have like really harsh criticisms of the Paralympics as being like, you know, fundamentally ableist on so many levels. And I mean, that's a whole other thing too, but it's a TV show, right? Like we all know that. Like NBC is saying, I think, what's his name? Jeff Shell. Is that his name? He's saying that like, this is probably going to be NBC Universal's like most profitable Olympics. And it's going to be the most depressing one on camera, I think, but like all the corporate contracts are like going to be satisfied. All the deliverables will be delivered by like July 23rd/whatever. Like it's not conspiratorial to say that. That's what this is about. That's what even the mainstream fucking like business insider coverage is saying. Like, that's why these things are going forward. Even the athletes are having a hard time swallowing this in a lot of cases. So it's like everything else. It's the stupidest, most direct answer. It's money. It's all the other stuff is just PR to us. Like the sports is incidental. It would be whatever, you know, it would be. You know, they're talking about sagging into like, you know, e-games by 2028. And that's they'll do what, like, they don't care about the sanctity of whatever the classical, you know, it doesn't matter. It's whatever.
I guess it's mostly like the sponsorships and shit, right? Like the McDonald's deals, the merchandising deals, all that stuff. Cause even like the ratings were going down the past few years, right? From what I understand.
Yeah, and that's something I can never tell because I'm not an expert on that stuff. But with a lot of those things, I don't know how much of that is like unaccounted for online or whatever. But, you know, it's not unpopular, but it requires this like multi-billion-dollar, multi-continent operation to keep it. Like, it's very similar to the NCAA and other institutions, I think, that like formed in the late 1800s, like post-Reconstruction era kind of like America, and these offered these new forms of exploitation. And I think people are rethinking at least some of these things, and they're all kind of tied together. That doesn't mean any of them are going to go away tomorrow, but the Olympics seem weaker than the institution of American policing or a lot of these things. So it feels like an interesting, not to jump to that, but you know, we have Beijing 2022 around the corner. And, you know, I think for people on the left and us, that's still like going to be very interesting and difficult to navigate, because you're going to have all this, you know, Western American, you know, xenophobic, xenophobic energy for the wrong reasons. And some of the criticisms will be like, maybe, you know, ish right. And, you know, our goal is to connect the fact that like, oh, you think Tokyo is fucked up and Beijing is fucked up, and like, but also look at LA, look at what they're trying to, they're putting a bid in Australia right now and for 2032, and they're looking at Vancouver for 2030. And we're talking to all these folks, but they're very undemocratic, like bidding process that they, you know, used to do is thrown out the window now, because they know that's the weird part. It's historically unpopular. Even before COVID, they were still struggling to have more than one city or in the entire world say, we want to vie for this slot. So it's like, you know, but at the same time, the Tokyo Olympics are going to almost definitely happen this summer. I think that's that tension that like rings, you know, that echoes in a lot of other places in society right now. You're like the housing crisis across America, like how is this going to like last? How is this going to like actually keep going? How are they going to evolve? And one of their big evolutions on the Olympic side is they're saying, hey, we're not going to build any more, you know, stadiums. We're going to use things that already exist that are probably already displacing people. They won't take credit for all the hotel development that happens around them. Like, that's not a part of the Olympic budget or plan, even though it clearly is. They're going to say these are privately financed, like in LA's case or in Vancouver's case. However, the second it goes over budget, it's all on the public taxpayer, right? Like, in some ways, corporations have to front a little bit more money, but they know they're going to get that back. All Olympics go over budget. So even if they didn't go over budget, we would say that this Olympic bid in LA started in like 2014. That's like already 7 or 8 years of like a lot of city officials, like entire staff's time. Like, that, we'll never get that back. Plus another 7 years, plus whatever the fallout is.
Yeah, because they spend millions making the bid, right? Like they put down millions to the taxpayers just for the opportunity to ask to host the Olympics.
Right, in most cases. And so, and I think the LA bid is a, you know, because we were originally bidding for 2024, and then Boston was like the American front runner, and then they had a really successful campaign that brought up a lot of good things. They had the media support, they had some political support, you know, like, some inside support, and they ran it out. But with our bid, that's just not the case anymore. They don't have any sorts of checks and balances. But they said, oh, we're not going to, the public isn't going to pay for the bid, right? So Casey Wasserman, we have a shitbag mayor who's about to be named like Biden's ambassador to India, Eric Garcetti. You probably heard of him in the last year. We've been on his ass for a while. So he's the public official that pushed the LA 2028 Olympics, which is basically what he was trying to pull a Mitt Romney, and he has very similar politics to Mitt Romney, who, quote, fixed the budget of the Salt Lake Games and then kind of used that to like get onto the national scene. So the private sector guy financing the LA 2024-2028 bid was this guy, Casey Wasserman. And he said he knows that like public financing of stadiums and these kind of bids is like kind of going out of fashion in the last few years. So he said, okay, I'm going to call. And he said this in the press. He's like, oh, I'm going to make a few phone calls. He raised $60 million. So that was their marketing budget and blah, 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 travel budget. But he even said in an LA Times article that he used one of his own, you know, like he owns many companies, and I can touch on that in a second. And one of them is a media company. He said, you know, they got, I think, $1 million or $2 million contract out of that $60 million, but he apparently wasn't in the room that day. He stepped out of the room that day, which I'm sure everyone believes. So on paper, they claim it's privately financed, and some of that is true. However, when Eric Garcetti from, I think, 2016 to 2017, maybe even in 2015, I'm not sure, but they had to fly to Switzerland, Lima, Peru, so on and so forth to court the Olympic bid, you know, you have to go through these rounds. It's like a debutante ball kind of fraternity situation. And what the LA, I think it was an LA Times journalist found out that like, oh, LAPD was on all those trips. And that's actually like, that's city money. Like that's LAPD overtime. You know what I mean? Like, and they've never come forward to say how much that is. So even on paper, it is still not true that like, oh, we're paying for this in so many different ways, but like any other issue, getting a person to slow down and just like pay attention to it. And once they do, the research we've done with anecdotally and more formally has just shown that there's so many reasons to be against this. And most people, I think, recognize that they will not benefit from this.
Japan's estimated budget was $7.5 billion, which already seems like a lot, because part of their thing was, oh, yes, we already have some of the stadiums built, right? Their final budget is right as of February was $35 billion. Nothing else in society, I think, could cost five times as much to the taxpayers as they expect. And people are just expected to take it, and everybody keeps their jobs. In fact, they get to put it on their resume that they hosted, brought the Olympics to Tokyo. And it's a pattern that's happened before and it's going to happen again. Like, how the hell do they keep getting away with this? Specifically the IOC, because they are such a, like a scandalized, organization. I remember a couple of years ago, weren't they all like supposed to be going to jail for, you know, for like dirtbag shit, like Hunter Biden shit, right? Like they were all pulling, but they're somehow are still surviving. I know the bidding process isn't as, you know, intense as it used to be, but like, are they actually getting kind of close to falling apart with, you know, how mismanaged the Japan Olympics has been and this coming resistance to the LA Olympics?
No, you're totally right. It's like something in some ways that a lot of people have accepted, like FIFA, even though I think in the past people have referred to FIFA because they're both based in Lausanne, Switzerland, and like they're both equally unaccountable and based on like dark, you know, Swiss fucking Nazi gold. Like that's what we're talking about. Like Henry Kissinger is literally like an honorary IOC member, so he gets paid more than athletes to go like fall asleep in the stands. It's bad. People know it's bad. People are going to know it's really bad this year. And yet, just it's kind of like so many other institutions that have these like third, fourth, fifth, you know, Freddy Krueger just keep coming back because the marketing money can keep pushing and just having a Simone Biles come back for one last chance or this or that or, you know, or one more narrative, one more sports narrative and can... It's still really powerful people, especially in America and especially in LA where exceptionalism runs so high, even though we're one of the most like deficient, incapable, I think, cities on the planet in so many different categories for the amount of wealth that's here. It's like we're so incapable. So the idea that we could pull off anything, let alone improving bus routes, which we probably won't do by 2028. In fact, the opposite because of like the Olympics. You know, it's just like really insulting to people, I think, who live here and care. And I don't know. The speaking, like, normally, yes, it's like it's just a revolving door at the IOC. But something interesting recently. So there's the IOC, the International Committee. There's like 100 of them. That's like the I'm struggling for that. There's a good sci-fi like analogy here. I can't put it like that's like this, like the ruling council, maybe the Jedi. I don't know. They're like up there, like that elite class. And then there's every nation has its own NOC, which is its national organizing committee. And it's spread out so that there's just very little accountability. And on the Japanese side, so there's the JOC, who's been, they're the ones, quote unquote, responsible for organizing Tokyo 2020. Earlier this year, the head of it got stepped down because he called the famous entertainer the Olympig. And he was, you know, like people came at him, they're like, that's really misogynist, et cetera, et cetera. And he was replaced by a woman who had also had a scandal at the Sochi 2020 or the 2014 Olympics rather, where she had allegedly sexually harassed an athlete. I don't know how true that is, but it was, that was what was coming up in the news, like the day after when she was appointed. This is less funny, obviously. The head of the accounting department of the JOC, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, jumped in front of a train because it's been reported that there's a connection between that and a whistleblower that came forward two days before about like wonky stuff going on in the budget, which is still $20 billion over budget. So that's something that like was a big news story for a day internationally and then just fell off. So there's a lot of like wild stuff, like everything from the last year and a half that we're still just kind of catching up on. And like, it's really, there's like every sorts of kind of issue you can imagine, I think, are happening in this Olympics.
You mentioned Simone Biles and, you know, getting to see her one last time. And you mentioned earlier about how the 4-year cycle is one of the most horrific things you could possibly do to an athlete. For anybody who actually who follows sports outside of, the Olympics, like testing the athletes only every 4 years, only stage only every 4 years, basically is like asking them not to have a career almost, or at least not to have a career on camera. Cause it's like, that's just such a long time between like these athletes being spotlighted, and you age, it's a young, every sport is a young person sport more or less. And so it actually is like very anti-athlete to only talk about them every 4 years and to set up certain sports to basically have to operate on that, you know, sort of level.
Oh, yeah, especially gymnastics, which they always use as, like, you know, the flagstone of the Olympic broadcast. The whole sport is abusive. You're taking underage people and, you know, essentially warping their bodies forever for the promise of brief Olympic glory. And obviously there's been a lot of issues with Team USA and the abuse scandal. So one of the most fucked up things about the Team USA recovery narrative is this idea that these gymnasts who were abused by Team USA, then they have to go back and like win the gold for Team USA who abused them. It's like completely insane if you think about it for just 1 second.
Yeah, it's just, you know, gymnastics are interesting. You know, I used to wrestle, and that's a similar, does similar stunting things to a developing child body. And I think gymnastics in the era that I grew up in, I've seen, you know, kind of how it's developed. And other people who follow that sport, I think much closer than I do, have also admitted that like so many, whether it's, you know, high contact sports that really drive you to break your body at an especially early age and slash maybe mind in a lot of situations, both literally or, you know, and obviously the Larry Nassar stuff was big in the news, and throwing him in jail for forever is like, I think, satisfactory to like the kind of mainstream media. But one of the coaches, you know, killed himself earlier this year because he was going to go down for sexual trafficking charges. And it's not just gymnasts, obviously. It's like all these sports, like equestrian swimmers all across LA. It's like boxing. It's not even gender specific. It's like these unaccountability systems are just go so deep, and they go so local in a way that you're not aware of.
And I think when it's a sport that is a little bit marginalized within sports, something that people think they only can see during the Olympics, it's like, it's just completely fucked up. They're like, okay, like this is like women's empowerment that you get to watch ice skating like once every 4 years. And like, again, we don't need the Olympics to show women's sports or to show sports that aren't, you know, men's team sports, which are the only thing that really gets covered in depth, and making it seem like the Olympics are the only opportunity for people to have these sports as part of how they avoid accountability.
Yeah, and the scarcity, I think, creates more exploitation on all these levels, being like, you have to do it. This might be the only chance you have in your life.
Yeah, it's very like representation matters, and don't think about if you're being exploited as long as you get to like represent.
Yeah, another through line is just the Olympics create artificial deadlines. So like we focus more on the city side, but that happens to the athlete and all this other stuff. Like I guess all these things are contrived if you really break it down, but there's no reason this couldn't happen actually more regularly with more accountability, with more like...
with an athlete-owned league or something, yeah. A non-exploitative system. The Olympics make it seem like the only way to have global sports competition is the Olympics. And that is not true. They are a traveling carnival that exploit cities and grift people.
They're packagers. They're like, if you want to bring it back to media, like they're just packagers. They're like, we have all these other sports and we have this old brand from 2000 years ago that we've rebooted like a French, like fucking Baron. Like they don't, you know, just going back to all that lefty shit. It's like in the past, like in between the world wars, like there was a really concentrated worker driven. They did alternatives to the games. They did like actual quote unquote, what they would call amateur. Well, we would call, I guess, amateur games now, people that, you know, full-time do something else and aren't like lay aristocrats. Kind of how the NCAA defines like amateur as well. But like they had in Chicago, I believe. I'm a little bit rusty on these details. And in a couple cities in Europe, in one case, I think it was the LA one in 32, they had, I believe, more people at the alternative games than the other ones. And obviously it wasn't well covered in media, but it is documented. It's not just, you know, a fucking rumor. It's like these things happen. And I think the world wars and the other, you know, the machinations against the left globally and in America have really kind of quelled those things. And one of the, you know, to be real for like one second, it's like one of the problems since the 80s, and, you know, LA had the Olympics in the early 80s. And that was the one that really like accelerated the sponsorships, the McDonald's. That was the first one to have all these sponsorships to make up for a debt that they had accrued. And I'm not saying we wouldn't have gotten there eventually. They just like, they made it happen here. And in that era too, it's like labor has really been, unfortunately, on the side of the Olympic project in general in America and elsewhere, because this is a tenant driven thing too, as well. And, you know, an abolition based project too, that is still kind of like Unreconciled a little bit. And that's a whole other, probably several hours of conversation about how that works out. But, you know, we're kind of seeing it all here. But there is a rich history of opposing these things because it's fucked up. But like everything erased that's good in American history, you know, it's like you rely on podcasters or leftists or other people, academics or whatever, movement people to kind of like be like, oh, this thing happened in your city. You know, you have to remember that this happened. And to be clear with all these issues, obviously, it's like we're not saying that the Olympics creates environmental degradation or police militarization or displacement. It just really accelerates these things and creates kind of like a reverse shock doctrine. It's like you're planning a hurricane in your city in 8 years. And so you're going to create this state of exception to like do things maybe would have happened, but maybe not as easily as if it would have had the Olympics. So, you know, LA is, I think, the capital of homelessness and unsheltered, you know, like living and houselessness. We have, I think by last count, we have 66,000 unhoused people in the county. That's probably an understatement. That's where this work was born out of. I think the LA Tenants Union, to give them a shout out, and a partner of ours, their definition of a tenant is anyone who's not in control of their housing. So that's a renter, that's an unhoused person, that's someone who's incarcerated. All of these people are the biggest targets for LA 2028 because it means more Airbnbs. We were out in Venice today canvassing because Airbnb is now official partners with the Olympics for the next decade through LA 2028.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So it's just like, it's just stacking things on top of you, stacking all these forces on top of each other. We're going to see, you know, in Echo Park in late March, and this is a lot of my both organizing work and work at the time for now, for the next year, is studying what happened at Echo Park Lake, which there are about 200 unhoused people that were, you know, which is close to where Jack lives. He was out there for all that stuff too. You know, they had about 400 LAPD officers. It was a horrible kind of 48-hour ordeal. No Olympics was born from a DSA Housing and Homelessness Committee in 2017, which is also where Streetwatch came from, which I think, you know, along with Ground Game LA, did a lot of the supporting of the organizing there as the encampment grew. And even before COVID, like there was some solid work between housed and unhoused tenants happening then and bridging these gaps. That is the new model. So these people were cleared in a really violent way. We were out in Venice today where the boardwalk is another big site of a lot of encampments and displacement and Airbnbs and all these things are, you know, this is the tourist zone for the 2028 Olympics. And that's the new model. We have a big of like mass displacement. And, you know, the person who started that, Mitch O'Farrell in CD13 at Echo Park Lake, he is the head of the Olympic Committee, you know, in LA. We don't think that's a coincidence. The other guy who's really pro-Olympics is former LAPD. He's a Democrat. He just announced he's running for mayor. I mean, we've known he's running for mayor, but he just dropped his campaign video the other day. It looks like a really corny, like Pawn Stars, like opening kind of credit sequence campaign. And we're in the 80s again, obviously. And it feels really stupid. And like we're rebooting the 80s in so many ways. And the Olympics makes all of these fights a lot harder because it puts liberals or maybe not super active people or squishy people in the middle in like an uncomfortable situation. It would make them help clear out a park more easily if they have this on their back. So that's really what this is about, is like protecting and trying to like stop more people from dying, even though we know that stopping the Olympics is not gonna, that's not the end all be all either. There are broader goals for this group. So if you're on that side, get down with us, you know, follow us. We're at No Olympics LA on all the different platforms and whatever. And we'll let you know when there's opportunities. If you're out here, you know, we're all volunteer. We don't require we're not a nonprofit even. Like, if you want to chip in even remotely, we got really used to that, obviously, because we work internationally. Like, you know, drop us a line, No@NoOlympicsLA, and or just, you know, just boost our shit, you know, like just get down with it. Or just like
tell people, you know, why the Olympics are bad. Most people don't know. And then when you explain it to them, it's pretty easy to explain. And they're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And we're also like, not just yeah. Like watch the Olympics if you want. It's going to be a fucking really dark one this year. Like, actually, like lean into that and like do what you want. Notice
for the first time how weirdly fascist the NBC coverage of the Olympics is.
And has always been, you know what I mean? And so, you know, get down with us. We'd love to hear from anyone. It just hits so many different areas of, especially like, unfortunately, of like both civic life, you know, like living in a city and also just pop culture. that's one of the benefits of talking about it, because everyone knows what it is. Unfortunately, everyone knows what it is, and so it requires a lot.
And I think this year people are probably more skeptical of nationalism, even people who might normally be marks for the type of nationalism espoused by the Olympics are a little more skeptical because of how bad the vaccine rollout was everywhere, because people saw rich people escaping while everybody else was kind of left to their own devices. So I think the sort of expectation they have that people will just fall in line when they see like these flags and all the fascist Leni Riefenstahl type imagery that goes with the Olympics. And I don't know that people will anymore.
Yeah, just on a quick note, they still said it's cool to fly the imperial flag in Japan this year. So I don't know if we're going to see that out this year, no. But they got the go-ahead. So that's like nothing's changed, you know what I mean? So the state of exception of COVID is still kind of lingering in this weird thing we're in. So, you know, all power to the people in fucking Japan from all sectors of life. That's the interesting thing about Japan, too, is like it's activated like nurses, doctors, teachers, students, you know, people outside, even just like your normal quote tenants and abolitionist groups. And so,
yeah, nobody wants athletic exceptionalism more than like their own health, you know?
Yeah. And it just makes it bear. So we love any opportunity. If anyone else wants to have us on, let us know. We want to talk about this while this is in the air. We'll probably do some sort of live stream once the games are going to kind of mystery science, you know, bummer it out. Bummer summers.
All right. So Molly, tell me about Molly Sleet Friends.
Oh, that's just my Patreon. I make mixes every month. The July mix is going to be late this month because my computer's in the shop. But I made a Miami-based June mix that was probably a little bit premature and really more of a July mix anyway. So please check it out.
I
know, it's
pretty bass heavy. Oh. I checked it out. It was pretty bass heavy. That's definitely a summer in Florida.
Well, I was just like, what do I want to listen to, like getting back out into the world? And it was like Miami bass.
Well, it's only summer until after July 4th when it's fall,
yes,
right?
That's,
and then
the
we
Kate,
have to segue into fall.
That's the Kate Raft guarantee, is July 4th is the last day of summer, and then it becomes Halloween season.
So,
which I agree with completely.
Yeah, support Molly's Susie Friends. Do you want to talk
about
Heidi?
Yeah, I'm going to have a podcast coming out this fall called Heidi World, about Heidi Fleiss, the Hollywood madam from the 90s. And that'll be a lot of fun municipal corruption Los Angeles history. All the fun stuff.
LA Times, LAPD, all the same fucking
dirtbags.
True crime,
All the same dirtbags who are associated with the Olympics.
True crime that isn't pro cop.
Yes.
That's the brand.
True crime that's pro sex work and anti-cop.
Hell yes. You have to come back and talk to us about that.
For sure, yeah. And thanks for having us on Struggle Session. We love the show.
Yeah, big fans.
For Molly, for Johnny, this is Leslie. Struggle Session, signing out. Peace.